This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Exonic is a producer, DJ, and former NFL player. DJ Exonic is going to join me to explain about his career and how he went from the NFL to an internationally renowned DJ. Thanks for joining me, Exonic.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me, how long have you been DJing?
Started DJing in 2011, so it'll be almost 8 years now. For my first gig was October of 2011. Coming up on the better part of a decade now.
Your first gig, what was that like?
First gig, well, you know, I'd like to think that I did great, but obviously I didn't. I don't think anyone could say they did a great job on their first gig. I was fortunate enough to have a great mentor, my friend Brian, who goes by the artist name D2A. He actually taught me how to DJ and lent me some DJ equipment and got me my first gig all within like a month, and was an instrumental part of getting me started in all of this. And so for that, I thought I was prepared, but at the end of the day, looking back, I probably should have been out playing in a nightclub at that point with my skills, but you know, you got to start somewhere, right?
Pretty much. So was your friend Brian, was he the inspiration for you to start DJing?
I would say he was just more of an instrumental mentor. The inspiration for DJing for me was, actually, I could probably trace the root of it to a Deadmau5 concert at Soldier Field in 2010.
Wow, that's very specific. What happened there?
I went to the show. It was the first time I had seen dance music presented on gigantic speakers, you know, that are as tall as a building with a big crowd of people that's all vibing to the same music. And, you know, before that, I had been, you know, you go to rock band concerts, that sort of thing, or the different, you know, summer bashes that the radio stations will have. But I'd never really seen, like, an electronic music producer performing their own music with their own light show and in a way that was totally immersive, and it sort of changed the way, the potential, the possibilities that I saw music and live performance, and that really inspired me to pursue that aspect of the music industry.
After seeing Deadmau5 play, did you think you were going to play like him, or were you thinking going into trance, dubstep, house? How did you know where you were going to go?
Deadmau5 is one of the best out there. He does the, you know, the whole electro thing, and now he's getting into some more aspects of techno and stuff like that. But for me, I like all kinds of music. I've always liked all kinds of music. However, with regards to DJing, I've always had a particular affinity for house structured music, whether that's, you know, tech house or techno or even electro and into the more commercial EDM stuff. Not that I like that stuff particularly, but I haven't been as narrowly specific in choosing, you know, one lane of it over the course of my DJing career, because I just enjoy the aspect of fitting all those pieces together in a way that makes sense, even if maybe they aren't from the same genre specifically, because there's some electro tracks that work with techno tracks, and you know, you can go on and on, and tech house tracks that work with old school house tracks, and if you can kind of take different parts of different songs and put them together with some songs that you produce yourself and some songs your friends have produced, you can really have a unique product in a market that's a bit saturated with DJs trying to do it.
So I can't help but heard you say commercial EDM. What is commercial EDM? I thought I heard it all.
Commercial EDM, I would just say, is that cookie cut, very basic, very short intro, short build with a vocal that has, you know, a predictable snare pattern going up to a drop that lasts, you know, no more than 15 or 30 seconds into the second verse. And then the whole thing's done in probably under 3 minutes. And it's basically like a commercialized adaptation of the whole house and electro arrangement formation. So on one hand, people will sit there and say, oh, that stuff is terrible, it sucks, or whatever. It's also just a way for people who maybe never were into dance music or house music to first get into it is by hearing a song by Martin Garrix on the radio, for example. Maybe they then start to listen to a serious dance music station on their radio, and then before you know it, they know a bunch of artists that they never would have known before, all because they like that one Avicii song or that one Martin Garrix song. So I'm not as big of a hater as some people are on the commercial EDM scene. I think that, like everything, it's just most of the pop music scene is just introductions into other genres that you are then free to explore on your own.
Okay, so I have to ask, you were an NFL player at one point. How'd you jump from playing football to doing this?
I finished playing football probably in around 2007, and I worked in real estate and in the markets for all down Chicago Board of Trade. I had a couple different jobs trying to find what I wanted to really do for the rest of my life after football. Music wasn't really a thought at that time. like I said, after I realized that there had been enough advances in computer technology to kind of allow a new avenue for music exploration for myself, just knowing that existed, because I was never the person who was a great live performer with regards to cadence. Like, if you gave me a drum set and said, play on the beat by myself and keep the beat for other people, like, it was not, I was no metronome, let's put it that way. And I was, same thing with playing guitar, things like that. It was like, for whatever reason, in my brain, the time was distorted in a way that didn't make it seem like I was a very good performer, but I understood the music and I understand what, you know, good music was and how it blended together and about musical key and those things. So once the technological and computer aspect of DJing and production kind of caught on and broke into the mainstream, that really like opened up a new avenue that I never really even thought of to my life before that even existed.
When it comes to DJing and the computer portion of it, did you ever think, hey, I should use two turntables, like go real old school, or no?
I learned on vinyl, actually. That was when Brian taught me to DJ. He taught me to learn on just an old school vinyl set and with real records. And I had to figure out how to make the songs work together, even though I had no clue what was going on. I had only my ears and no visual cues. And it was a really difficult, trying experience that I value immensely, because by learning on old school fundamental equipment, you learn the basics of DJing, to which you can then apply to playing on any equipment, whereas some of the DJs now that learn on just a laptop and a controller, for example, would have no clue, even if they had to go into a club and play on CDJs, and would really have no clue if they were asked to play on vinyl. Whereas if you are able to play on vinyl, the basic skills are translatable upward to almost any other set of equipment.
Would you ever think that you'd want to go back to vinyl and do specifically that? Because you don't see a lot of DJs do it anymore. That's like a really cool little market.
I think that there's a definite market for vinyl DJing and for turntablism, specifically people that can scratch and do other live performance aspects. And I think there's a certain sound with vinyl that the analog warmth that some people say you just can't replicate in any way digitally. I don't think personally that I would go back towards performing on vinyl, only because the style at which I DJ requires cue points, it requires organization of my songs, it requires fast access and different parts of the songs and fast transitions between different songs that would be almost impossible to simulate with vinyl, simply because of the physical component of taking records and putting them on and having to change them as fast as I'd be able to change something digitally, if that makes sense.
No, that does make sense. I could see that.
If I mix a song in, if I start playing one song, I'm already looking in my next list for a song in the same key, and I'm loading it, and then I'm jumping to a cue point that's two-thirds of the way through the song that I've preset on my own time. And by doing that, within 30 seconds, I'm already starting potentially at some point to either mix in a sample or a loop or something over the song that's playing, all because digitally it's prepared. Whereas the only person who I've ever seen that can come close to doing something like that on vinyl is the late, great DJ AM. He was truly a spectacular talent and would DJ as fast and as well as anyone could using a stack of real records. And to this day, I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, that was a little bit before my time, but I always love watching videos of old school DJs using it with actual vinyl. And it's so impressive. You can't help but to sit
there. I'm going
to
send you a DJ AM set via email and that you can watch if you appreciate that. You'll have a totally even greater appreciation of it.
Oh, man. Thank you. I would love that, because I love me some DJ vinyl. I don't think there's enough of it, personally.
100%. Yeah, when it comes down to technology and DJing, there's a lot of, you know, there's old school purists, and there's the people who say, it doesn't matter what you play on. There's some people who say, well, if you come to the clubs, you don't bring a laptop and a computer. And to me, it's more about just respect for equipment, respect for the industry, respect for other DJs. Play on what you play on, and you play on it well. As long as you set it up in the wherever you're playing in a way that doesn't interfere with the club's equipment or the festival's equipment. And if that's your thing, I personally think that the more things you can play on, the better of a DJ or performer you're going to be. But that's just a personal opinion, because then you're prepared for any situation.
When it comes to the lights, when it, at a festival or at a club, do you have to coordinate with them to do that? Like, how does that work?
So the bigger the act is, the more that becomes relevant. You're talking about something called VTech or video tech, and basically smaller artists, and by smaller I mean non-touring headliners. If you think about someone like Tiesto, they have an entire visualization package that's been designed and is time-coded in a way that when Tiesto reaches a certain point, in one of his songs, a new visualization will start. Now, he can mix or do whatever he wants before to get there, but once a certain time point is passed, it triggers something in the code, and is also assisted by live video employees that are basically helping control the whole show. A lot of that involves massive preparation. And again, if you're someone like on that level, for example, Excision in the dubstep scene, sometimes that almost becomes sort of limiting as to what set you can play, because if you have 20 songs or 25 songs you're going to play in your set, and your visualization people have designed 25 songs worth of cool stuff and cool art that you're going to be using, you're sort of limited to that those 25 songs, because if all of a sudden you start going, you know, too far into a back catalog, and now the guys are trying to decide what to do up there and what to play on the screen. So I think for that reason, some artists will do sets like Excision, for example, doing a detox set, is where he'll just play all the songs that he's found that he likes from other artists and not necessarily have it be tied to like specific concrete visualization. Now, with regards to most clubs and festivals, they usually just have a lights or a video person, and they can incorporate your logo, that sort of thing, and scale it up to a certain size. But once you become a touring act, that's when having like personalized video display, a personalized light setup comes into play, because in essence, you're sort of your own production house there. You're bringing it along with you on tour and incorporating it into the venues you perform at.
Oh, wow. I thought it was all done at that moment. I feel kind of silly now.
Let me backtrack for one second here. It's like, when you mean live at the moment, I'm not trying to say that it's all, like, you couldn't press play on a DVD and then DJ along to it. It's not like prearranged to that level. It's more like once certain songs start, it'll be a certain style of visualized, you know, a certain set of colors and patterns that will come up. And this, again, this is for the touring headliners, the big names who have they'll even bring in their own light stacks and their own lasers and their own, and Deadmau5, you know, for him, it's a cube, will bring it around, and that's stuff that they own and they're bringing and putting on stage. And that stuff is just basically, it's just computer code. It's tied into, you know, you reach certain points in a song, and then it's like a trigger. It'll trigger off certain, you know, videos or images or patterns or things like that.
You know what? I was thinking, when it comes to concerts, like, you know, if it's Foo Fighters, they've done this set over and over again. They've done the same set in Chicago. They've done the same set in Baltimore, to California, all across the world. It shouldn't be any different for DJs, too. But I don't know why I thought it was different.
The thing is, it is a little different only because when you're DJing and you know, guitar, like when you have a band and you're playing something like a Foo Fighters song or whatever, and they have something on the screen, it's really easy to have like a song. You hear the song start, you hear the song end, and there's, you know, what, 30 seconds in between while they're switching guitars and stuff. So that makes it really simple to have like a certain visualization pattern or video for each song. If you have, you know, a DJ where you're trying to mix everything together, those mixes might be, you know, depending upon the DJ, they may take a little bit longer, like if he's holding a blend for longer, or they may, or he or she is holding a blend for longer, or they may be quick or whatever it is. So you can't necessarily always anticipate that your video people are going to be, you know, perfectly in sync with the DJ, which is why it's kind of like a combination of live cues and previously assigned cue points and things like that for the video and the music to kind of work together on the big production, the big stage like that.
So right now, are there any current projects that you're working on?
Well, right now I'm very focused on my festivals that I have coming up this summer. Spring Awakening Music Festival, that's in early June out in Hoffman Estates. I believe Hoffman Estates is the town it's in. I know it's changed location a couple of times in the past. I think the people that throw it, React, are great people, super creative, super intelligent. Doesn't matter where they have the festival, it's going to be a good time. This will be my 7th summer in a row playing Spring Awakening, and it's becoming like an integral part of my summer experience in Chicago. And I look forward to it every year. I'm grateful for a chance to play it again. So that's pretty much my focus right now. That and a couple of other festivals I have lined up. I just found out that I'm going to be playing EDC Vegas in a couple of weeks, so I'm heading out there, and I'm also playing Electric Forest later in June. So pretty much the next 2 months are going to be mostly focused on festival set preparation, because the things that I do in my festival sets in the summer kind of sort of connect with my fan base and sort of let them know where I'm at and build on for the rest of the year. You know, this is the sound that I'm playing right now. And it's been fairly consistent for the last few years now. I play bass heavy, house structured dance music, and there's a lot of different sub varieties of that. So,
man, what does it feel like? You went from NFL, which most people would have died for, And now you're a very successful DJ. I mean, you can't stop winning here.
I sincerely appreciate that. It has not been a path that has just been, you know, laid out with roses, or a path that was easier. And there's been a lot of, you know, things in between, like anybody's life has their, you know, their challenges that they have to overcome. I was fortunate enough to have two great parents who instilled in me a belief that I really could do most things that I would want to do if I really applied myself and put my mind to it and tried and learned from failures and that sort of cliche thing that, while it seems cliche, is actually really sound advice. Having made the NFL after being told in high school that there was less than a 1 in 10,000 chance that you'd even, you know, get invited to an NFL camp as a high school player, and then I played in the NFL. So for me, like, those things, like, odds never really deterred me from pursuing something. When I started DJing, it was the same thing. Everyone said, there's a lot of DJs, and you'll never get paid doing DJing, and you'll never, you know, break into the clicks or the scenes or whatever. And for me, that's just words. That's just other people's opinions that don't really matter to my own personal path. I just try to do what I'd like to do and work hard at it and see if it works. So, I mean, I think that was the advantage of being able to, you know, how it translates anyway, like succeeding in one sort of has some skill sets that you can translate into succeeding at the other. I know there's some other professional athletes that have played and had some success in DJing too. I know Shaq, Big Shaq's out there doing the bass music thing. Shaquille O'Neal, and he played at Lost Lands, a major bass music festival last year. I know Roni Cicli is a former NBA player, and he does some DJing things too. I believe someone told me that I was the first person to ever start an NFL game and play the main stage of a major festival in dance music. So I think that's a cool bit of trivia. Maybe someday when I'm gone, I'll still have that legacy. Who knows? There's so many DJs now, there'll be some more NFL guys soon, probably.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's probably true. But that's still funny, though. I mean, you're the first, so that's all that matters. I love that you're from Chicago. And I have to know, do you have any residency here?
I think the residency game has changed a bit.
Really?
From what it used to be even 10 years ago. I think gone are the days where a club will bring in one DJ or two DJs and play them every single weekend. Now residencies, at least the ones that I pursue, are more group-based. Different companies or different, whether it's a production company or promotion company, or even a big company that has a subdivision devoted to dance music like Corona. For example, like in Chicago, there's probably five groups that I play with regularly. The first is React Presents, the group that's during Spring Awakening Festival. They have events all year round. They'll put me on for supporting of big artists that come to town or here and there at different places. And BAM Creates is like an experiential crew. They throw parties all over the city. Whenever they ask me to play, I'll play wherever the gig is because I know it's going to be a good time. Corona has their Electric Beach, and I've developed a good relationship with them. So when they come to Chicago, I'll play at Corona Electric Beach events. There's a silent disco company, Hush Concerts, that throws events in Chicago and has an arm out here, and I love playing for them. And probably one more is Evol Chicago. It's a, you know, promotion and merchandise company that is another group that if they ask me to play, hey, we're throwing a party here, we're throwing an event here, I like associating myself with the right people as opposed to the right places, because, you know, people will go wherever their people are. They don't really necessarily go to a place because of the place unless it's like a legendary place, you know.
You kind of got into this by chance because of your friend Brian. Have you ever wanted to pay it forward?
I love working with DJs. I've probably helped, ever since Brian helped me get into DJing, I've probably had 5, 6, 7 artists that I've taken a really strong approach towards helping launch their careers and their names in Chicago, and some of them are having really, really, really good success right now. Jay Wara, a female producer who was in Chicago few years ago, starting off her career, we worked together on monthly parties, and we did several shows together back-to-back, and I really tried to introduce her to some of the people in the scene in Chicago, and now she's having a massive success on her own. She was just nominated as Breakthrough North American Producer overall for like a major publication, and she's had a couple of releases on Mousetrap and really big record labels. Then there's Bentley Dean, who has a couple of releases on Mousetrap as well, which is just a huge accomplishment to have, you know, to come up and produce songs and then have it be on one of the most respected labels. Birthday Party, and that's two Y's on each word. There's another couple of guys who I helped out getting them into the scene in Chicago, and last year they won the EDC Talent Competition, and now they're one of the hottest names in, you know, the hybrid bass music and house music crossover scene. So for me, it's huge reward to be able to help people out and, you know, help every single female DJ that I say anything to right now. One of the biggest things is, you know, now is a great time because there's so many talented DJs. Like, you know, there needs to be more female representation. So go, like, you know, go get what it is you want to get. Like, go for your dreams now, because now is the right time.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
can check out my upcoming shows and stuff. I mostly use Facebook to communicate that to the people that follow me. It's facebook.com/Xonic, X-O-N-I-C. You can also check me out on SoundCloud to hear some mixes and some songs I put out in the past. And that's soundcloud.com/Xonic Music, X-O-N-I-C Music. And you can also use Xonic Music on Instagram and Twitter if you'd like to follow me there.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.